Markeisha Babers is a working poet based out of Los Angeles. These days, she's using her writing to help other teens find their own voices. This weekend, she is also in Bend for the Muse Women's Conference. We caught up with her before the conference kicked off. Markeisha Babers, welcome to State of Wonder.
Hi, thank you.
Will you tell us a little bit about where you grew up in Watts?
Yeah, well, I grew up in a really bad part of Watts. I've actually moved around so much during my childhood, like I was never stable. But everywhere I went, it seemed to always be the worst part of the neighborhood, you know.
How old were you when you started writing your own poems?
I was 9 years old when I started writing my own poems. I had went through something, and I had really nobody to talk to at the time. It was a really hard situation for me, and I didn't know what else to do, so I started just writing about it. I just continued to write about it and write about it and write about it.
You know, it's obvious that you were going through difficult times with, you know, having to take care of your brothers and your mom's working and moving around a lot, sometimes being in between places. I'm not trying to crack you open like a can opener, but can you tell us anything about what was going on that needed to work its way to the surface?
We were homeless. We had been homeless for about 7 years, and I had a bad experience with a guy, and I couldn't tell my mom about it because they were close. So I was afraid to tell my mom, and I couldn't talk to my brothers because I didn't think they would understand that what had happened. So I was just, I had it just bottled up inside of me, and I didn't know who to turn to, who to talk to, or, you know, I didn't have, you know, a friend that could keep a secret, you know. And so that's what was really my main focus at that time, was like I needed to tell somebody, and the paper was the only person I could talk to.
Right. Well, will you share with us a little bit about how did you start reading your poems to other people?
The first time I read a poem out loud to an audience was at church. My mom, she had found one of my books that I write in, and she read the poem herself, and she decided that she thought it would be, I guess, good therapy for me to perform it for the church and get, you know, get some help with what I was going through. So she made me get up in front of the church, so I did, and that was the first time that I shared the poem.
How has your poetry changed as you've started to read it to people?
It went from during that very sad time in my life, from being of like very sad oriented poetry to more uplifting, like I've been there and I'm here to help you type poetry.
Will you read for us?
Sure. This poem is called Girl, and it's one of my newest poems. People only see me as that girl. That fat girl, just a little too black girl, always sitting in the back girl. That girl. People tell me, you're weak, girl. No one wants to hear you speak, girl. Look at me, I'm not at your feet, girl. Stop crying, girl. It's not like you're dying, girl. No one will like you for who you are, and your career definitely won't go far. Not with that hair, those clothes, those shoes. You really need to change all of you, girl. Sometimes I tell myself, you know, depression ain't cute, girl, and you should stop waiting and do what you have to do, girl. I mean, if you're gonna end it, then do it already, girl. Just make sure you keep your hand steady, girl. You wanna get it right, girl. Just wait till night, girl, then get the knife, girl. It only takes one slice, girl. Look at you, too weak to take your own life, girl, but God told me, aren't you tired of waiting to die, girl? All you have to do is try, girl. I gave you your life to live, girl. I gave you your gift to give, girl. I am always here, girl. It's okay to shed a tear, girl. Just don't fear, girl, because you are that girl, made strong enough to carry the world on your back, girl. So stand up straight, girl. You will be great, girl. It is your fate, girl. Don't worry about the past, girl. Remember, who is first shall be last. So you've endured the worst, girl. Now it's your time to be first, girl. Then God held out his hands. He said, take this, girl. Don't waste it, girl. You'll know when to use it, girl. It's a miracle, girl. Like you, you are a miracle girl.
Thank you. Would you tell me about the pivot in that poem, the point at which it turns from the voices, the negative voices in one's head, to messages of support and voices saying, yes, you can do this?
I didn't want it to just be a negative poem, just to end on a negative note. I wanted to show that there is a possibility to overcome. You are worthy of that. You are special. You are beautiful. No matter what anyone says, like, God created you and only God can judge you. Not even you can judge you like God can judge you. And that was the point of the poem that I wanted to present.
Markeisha Babers, I want to thank you very much for taking some time to talk to us. And we're looking forward to seeing you and Ben this weekend.
No problem. And thank you so much.
Markeisha Babers gave a speech at the Muse Women's Conference in Bend just this morning. You can catch her tomorrow at 1 p.m. at the conference for a workshop. Huge black and white photographs line the walls of Up 4 Gallery in Portland this month. The images look pretty abstract at first. Black backgrounds with irregular white shapes clustered across them. Step a little closer, and you see these are little tableaus made by the visual artist Rodrigo Valenzuela. And they've got quite a bit of detail. They capture structures he made for a show on view right now at Seattle's Fry Museum, Hedonic Reversals. The white shapes definitely suggest buildings, but the forms are so rough-edged. Are they under construction or in a state of decay? We asked Rodrigo Valenzuela.
They are like in this in-between point, and they are open for interpretation for what the viewer wants it to be. Some people look at them as a demolition, some other people view them like unfinished buildings.
Are these all images of works you developed for Hedonic Reversal?
Yeah, Hedonic Reversal is a large installation I built at the Fry Art Museum, aimed to figure out the way that we look at ruins or the aesthetic of ruins without taking advantage of the pain that ruins have implicit in them. I didn't want to go and document ruins in Detroit, for example, because I don't think it's fair for people that live in Detroit, having this guy out of town, over-aestheticizing their pain. It is a social issue.
I don't want to read too much into the places you've been living and working, but you have been in Seattle and Houston, two cities that have experienced explosive growth over the past two decades. Was looking around at those places very informative for what you've been working on?
Yeah, definitely both have, mostly Seattle, a big impact on this idea of the ruin, mostly in places that have a very recent history or not a very large past. You know, traveling around South America to Peru, and I travel around Mexico, Costa Rica, Guatemala. I have gone through most of Central America by bus or by ground, so I have seen how people understand their past. The ruins are there, and the ruins are present within a cosmopolitan city, or it's a source of knowledge of understanding themselves in the present. USA doesn't have too much of that, you know? The past or the ruins, they just mean in economic collapse.
Tell us a little bit about your process for the images that are on view here now.
I was thinking about the subject of the ruin. I've been making these plaster molds and little tiny figures, like very solid, simple plaster shapes that I paint white. So they're very, very monochromatic structures that they aim to resemble a structure or like a miniature. I photographed that. I go to the dark room, develop the film, I scan the film, I print it very large to like human size, like 8x8 feet. So this solid is a structure with all the details and all the problems that they have in this miniature, slowly they become the focal point. All the difference of texture, all the difference of quality, and all the difference in scale, they become very present when you have them in 8x8 feet. And then I paint 2x4s and I make these big plaster shapes that I place against the wall. And then I re-photograph that. The images echoing themselves and they generate the time. You can see the past and you can see that they will have a future if I keep playing this game of just refotographing and refotographing.
As cities build on themselves,
yeah.
too.
Yeah. Yeah, you never know where they're going to go, but like you know that they have there's something present that can show you the past, even if it's not completely present there.
Among the many little jokes that Valenzuela builds into his tableaus are price tags left on some of the pieces of wood that make up his towers, pieces of blackboard chalk with just the right force perspective to make you think they're spare marble columns. On some, his own ghostly footprint is left in powdery white dust.
It's impossible to tell looking at these whether, as ruins, they were something wonderful and graceful or something functional.
But we have that relationship with all the ruins, you know, when you may go to Rome and be very amazed for this room and the beauty of the room or like the feelings that you get in the room. And if you do a little research, maybe the public bathroom from the Roman, you think that these places have like they're a bigger signifier than what they are. We are surrounded by like banalities and like things that make our life and make our culture. They're very simple. Like foam core and like plastic will remain longer than any of these things. That is what other generations will know us for.
Rodrigo Valenzuela. His exhibition, Hedonistic Reversal, is on view at the Frye Museum in Seattle and at Up4 Gallery in Portland.